Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to the Parenting Aces radio show on Blog Talk Radio's UR Tennis Network. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and I am actually sitting outside at the gorgeous Malibu Racquet Club in Malibu, California, so it is morning where I am, though for many of you, I assume it's already afternoon, and I'm just so thrilled to be out here. It is a gorgeous, gorgeous morning out here in Malibu. I'm waiting for my son to go on the court, and while I do so, I am so excited to have the opportunity to talk with Tim Mayotte. He is our guest today, and Tim comes to us with an extensive background in tennis, both his own experience as a junior player, a collegiate player, and a professional, and now as a coach and a coaching educator. And Tim, I'm just so thrilled that you could be with us today. Thank you. Whoops, let me see. I think I lost him. Oh, there. Tim, are you with us?
I'm here.
Okay, good. I guess I accidentally pushed a button that muted you for a second there. Thank you so much for being here. And I, for our listeners who aren't familiar with your background, can you give us just a brief history of your life in tennis, both as a junior player and coming up through college pros and now coaching?
Well, I came from a big tennis family. My brother Chris and was 80 in the world, so he was a top ranked world player. Another brother and sister were very good juniors. So I was the youngest of eight and came up through New England ranks. And I think it's important to say that I developed quite late as a player. Which I think I always keep in mind when we talk about developing great players. I was 28 in New England in the 14-unders. So and New England was at that point not one of the strongest sections. But then at that point I put it in the high gear, and 3 years later I was number one in the country. I went to Stanford and won the NCAAs, and then got to as high as number seven in the world on the world rankings. Then I left the sport for a number of years and taught a little bit privately, and then got excited when Patrick McEnroe took over as the USTA player development. He recruited me to run their New York training center, which is still going. So I did that for about a year and a half. I found myself disillusioned with what was going on at the USTA, and my partner and I, Lee Hurst, who is there at the center, broke off and now have been running our own academy for 2 years in New York City, actually just a couple miles from the National Tennis Center. And as I've gotten into the sport, I've, as you mentioned, gotten more and more interested in coaching and coaching education, which I think is the one big missing link in why we're not developing the top pros.
Interesting. I've had that conversation with a number of people recently, that our coaches, we have some excellent coaches in this country, but we also have kind of a groundswell of mediocre coaches out there. And I've written about this before, just, you know, in terms of my own son's coaching and bringing him out here to Malibu to work with Craig Signorelli, and, you know, the stuff he learns in a few hours on the court with Craig, you know, it's amazing when you have exposure to a coach who really is educated and who's, you know, taken the time to be mentored through the years by more experienced coaches. And you know, has really devoted themselves to learning the game, not just from a technical standpoint, but from a strategic standpoint, from a mental standpoint. So you're kind of into this coaching education thing now, like really pushing for a coach's college and you know, a better certification process. Can you talk a little bit about why you decided to kind of enter that realm?
Well, first of all, I think your point is really well taken about when you're lucky enough to get with a great coach, and I know this was my experience as a player, and then also as I was able to work with my partner, Lee Hurst, at USTA, who was and is a great coach. So both as a player and as a coach, when you're exposed and learning from somebody who's great, you learn so much so quickly. And the feeling that I got was that, you know, there's so many kids who are struggling and not getting that attention that we really have to do something about that. And that's when I came up with the idea of a coach's university or a coach's college, where a young, not necessarily young, even of any age, a person who's really committed to becoming a top-flight coach could spend a year, possibly two, full-time learning all aspects of the game under the tutelage of a handful of great coaches. And what's most exciting to me is that when I walk on the court, the more educated I am, the more excited I am. The more curious I am, the more I expect from my students, and the harder I can push towards doing something that's, yes, difficult, but great. And it's that curiosity and enthusiasm that continues to drive me to push harder, and then also to expect also that the kids can get better than even maybe they dream of. So, and I see so many coaches who just seem to be out there feeding balls. And it makes sense if they're not excited, because if there's nothing, no model that they're looking at for how do you develop a kid, then of course it's going to be boring. But if you have all these tools at your disposal for technical improvement, tactical improvement, you know, mental work, physical training, then it just feels like there's almost too much to get done in every hour, and then you want to bring the kid back for another hour, and that enthusiasm certainly goes through to the kid and to the parent, and then the whole cycle just gets better and better. So I'm pleased that you got with a coach like Craig, because, you know, the impact is great. But what can be sad, Lisa, is that, you know, if you feel like parents have spent 2 or 3 years, you know, with a coach who's not really helping their kid. And, I mean, I'm sure you're experiencing it feels like such a waste when there's no real learning going on.
Right.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, I remember when my son first worked with Craig back in February, and, you know, we were out here for a week, and he saw such incredible growth in himself, and I, of course, saw it, you know, from the outside looking in. And, you know, as a parent, you beat yourself over the head. It's like, oh, my God, you know, he's at that point, he was 17 and a half. It's, you know, the second semester of his junior year, and we're just now getting to this, you know, incredible opportunity. What could his game look like had we found this level of coaching when he was 9 or 10? And, you know, it's, the amount of money we would have spent, I'm guessing, would be comparable. It's not that we've spent any less money getting, you know, less effective coaching. Coaching is coaching. It's expensive, and the game's expensive to play. Why not, you know, have the opportunity to maximize the money you're spending and get the most bang for your buck? And for us, it was simply one of those lucky kind of circumstances where, you know, I came across Craig on Facebook, read something he had written, and asked him to come on this show, and, you know, spoke with him for an hour and was like, oh my gosh, I've got to get my kid to you. You know, so
And that's what's so ultimately so angering to me, Lisa, is these parents who are making such extraordinary sacrifices, and the kids too, who are out there working so hard to want to get better, and yet they're working with folks who, you know, and again, I have to say, like, you know, there are many, many great coaches, but there are many folks who are really should not be teaching developmental tennis. And it's so angering to think that that kind of expenditure is put out there and that kind of effort, and yet it's like going to a doctor who can't really help you.
Right.
And that's another thing that really upsets me about when I talk to people and they say, well, the kids today don't want it, and they're, you know, there's a different culture, and these kids are lazy, and I just frankly do not see that. Yeah, of course there's lazy kids, but there's a boatload of really driven kids who want to play great tennis and yet are not being served by many, many of the coaching situations that they're in. And to me, that, you know, I feel like we should have like malpractice insurance.
Yeah.
And the parents shouldn't get mad at themselves, because, you know, I use the analogy of, like, if I'm doing some video analysis, and the parent, it's like going to a radiologist and looking at an X-ray, and the parent doesn't and shouldn't be required to understand what's going on. That's the coach's job. So it really, really comes down to us as coaches to improve our discipline.
Yes. Well, and so, I mean, that kind of brings us to this conversation of what's going on with player development in our country, and, you know, with Patrick McEnroe no longer at the helm, I feel like there's an opportunity for USTA to really do an overhaul and, you know, bring people to the table that have an inside view on what things have looked like the past several years, maybe people that have had the opportunity like we have, you know, to be with a coach that's got this incredible knowledge and you know, seek out information from those in the trenches to figure out how to make things better. And what's interesting to me is this whole idea of coach education. I've mentioned this on the show before. My son wants to coach. I mean, that's what he wants to do after college, and after he tests himself on the tour, I guess, a little bit, if he decides to go that route. But he had spoken with Craig the first time he was out here and said, you know, how do I get a job like yours, Craig? You know, what was your path to get to this place that you're at? And Craig listed, I mean, a laundry list of who's who in tennis coaching, of people that he's had an opportunity to be on the court with simply as an observer, not taking a lesson from them, not assisting them, just simply observing and absorbing this great coaching going on, and then using that to develop his own coaching style. And he kept stressing that with my son, you know, that's what you have to do. You have to surround yourself with people that are trained and have the knowledge and have the experience and are willing to share that with you. And so this whole idea of, you know, U.S. player development having to model after Spain or model after France. Hang on one second. Sorry, they're on court three. Yes. All right.
We're right in the middle of it.
Yeah.
I love that. Court three.
Yeah, sorry.
That's beautiful. No, I love that, because you're right at the, at one of the epicenters of what's going on here. You send the kids out to court three. It's fantastic. I love that.
I know. Oh, gosh. So now I have to find my train of thought again. But, what I was saying was this whole idea of modeling our training after what's going on in Spain or France, and I think you wrote about this, it's not the training that's the issue. It's the coaching that's the issue. And our coaching model needs to look at how coaches in Spain are trained and how coaches in France are trained. You don't just come off the tour and get to go on a court and train a high-level player. You have to go through this educational process, which is what you're trying to establish, right?
That's absolutely true. And I think you know, I'm not saying that Spain's the best or Germany's the best or France, or I'm just saying gather information from abroad. And I actually wrote a proposal to Patrick and Jose about this coaching university. Part of it was to the proposal was to get seed money to get our best coaches together and start to get a framework of how to develop players from the best minds in tennis. So if you could get Craig, you could get Nick Saviano, you could get a number of the really top coaches, put them in a room, pay them to write a really great curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
And then hopefully you could hire a few of those guys to then run a program on a small scale first to enact that curriculum over, let's say, 1 or 2 years of training, and you could open it up to kids like your son or other youngsters, hopefully some more girls too, because there's very few girl coaches, women coaches, to study and
right.
do what Craig did, but in a more concentrated way. So if you get, my picture was to get 5 coaches and maybe 20 students and spend a year to 2 years learning technique, learning mental toughness, learning physical training, learning tactics, and how those things are interrelated, which obviously they're all completely interrelated. And then you've got a group, a core of really well-equipped young teachers to go out and to affect other coaches. And over time, I think, and hopefully in a short period of time, those young coaches and the great ones that are already there will have more and more impact and raise the bar for other coaches.
Right, and you build a groundswell. I mean, you know,
I think it's important to say that you know, again, this upsets me too about the fact that we don't have good enough athletes. I really think that's bunk.
Yeah.
But the big thing is to get good athletes with good coaches. And if a young 13-year-old boy or girl is spending 2 years at a critical stage of their development with a bad coach, it's very difficult to catch up from that. And that's both because they may not be learning the skills they need, but also that kills their spirit.
Right.
I know what it's like to work on a stroke as a pro, and you just have no idea what you're working on, or as a junior, for that matter, and you just get so frustrated. And then the relief you feel when you get somebody who says, well, how about trying it this way, or somebody who really knows the path, improving, and then your work ethic goes through the roof, or mine did anyway, because I wanted to improve. And finally, I had a framework to look at to try to get better.
Right, right. It's amazing to me how many basic tenets of tennis don't get taught to kids. I mean, for example, my son and Craig were having a conversation the other day, and they were talking about a match that my son just played where he had won the first set. He lost the second set in a breaker, and then there was a 10-point breaker for the third, and he ended up losing that. And it was a frustrating loss. And Craig said, so tell me what the turning point in the match was. And my son said, what do you mean? And he said, well, you know, what was the one point or the one game that turned the match around for this other kid? And they started talking about it, and, you know, Craig started asking more and more specific questions until he got the information he wanted out of my son. But my son had never had a conversation like that with a coach. You know, tell me why you lost the match. Where was the point that changed the momentum for you? And, you know, when you can come to that, and then Craig said, okay, so next time you're in that situation, do you have a plan for what you're going to do? And my son said, well, no. And he said, okay, well, then that's what we're working on this week. That's our plan for the week, is to work on specific situations and what to do in specific situations. Now, my son's 18 and a senior in high school. He's been playing tennis since he was 7 years old, and this is the first time he's having this conversation with somebody.
Yeah,
frightening.
That's crazy. That's crazy. And what Craig obviously is doing there, or maybe not obviously, is being specific.
Right.
But that's the thing. And there's a book I had a lot of problems with, but it's called Talent is Overrated.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And part of the very first section of the book, they talk about a great teacher working with a young violinist, and the violinist is repeating the same phrase over and over and over in a way that might seem a teeny bit tedious to some people, but the author was using it as a illustration of how important it is to work on these specific skills in this way that the goal is clearly identified. And so some coaches might say, oh, well, your son should have just gone out there and been mentally tougher. You know, why wasn't he tougher? And without saying what that means or filling in. And then ultimately the kids start to feel guilty for the fact that they're doing something wrong, but they've never been taught how to look at the problem and do it right. So it's that specific, you know, specificity, if I can pronounce that word, is critical on all types of coaches.
Right.
Working on my own language skills. But, and again, there's many, many great coaches, but can we get those coaches with really good kids and really eager kids and match them up? And obviously the more good coaches we have, the better the chance is that a player is gonna flourish and do great.
One of the things you mentioned was the fitness aspect, and you didn't say this, but I'm assuming you're lumping it in, also nutrition. And one thing that kind of boggles me is the lack of knowledge by many of the coaches I've come across on nutrition and fitness and what's appropriate at what stage of development in a young athlete, and how there's so much misinformation out there and coaches giving poor guidance and kids having poor habits. And again, like you mentioned before, missing that window of opportunity to really maximize development in the areas of fitness and nutrition. And I'm sure you saw this when the Olympics were going on. There was all this talk about what happens at our U.S. Olympic Training Center and how when the athletes first show up on site, they're put through a battery of tests, and each athlete is given a specific diet, specific drinks to use during competition, before competition, after competition, you know, all of that is done specific to each athlete. Wouldn't it be awesome if USTA Player Development had that service available and could train the coaches and help them give guidance to the players so that when they're in their maximum growth years, you know, physical growth years, that they're doing the appropriate things fitness-wise and nutrition-wise to maximize their growth and maximize their strength and their endurance and all of those things. Even their brain capacity, you know, is impacted so heavily by diet. So, you know, have you looked into that at all, or have you given any thought to that?
Well, just to take a little backtrack, as I was working with the USTA, you know, I thought their goals in a lot of ways were good, in the sense that I think they felt that they wanted to train a handful of players the proper way to really show that you could develop great players, and they wanted to address and attempted to address a lot of these issues, the fitness issue, the technical issue, the nutrition piece, the mental piece. Sadly, for reasons we've already discussed, they were not able to do that effectively because, in most cases, let me say that, because obviously they've had some developed some great players and done some nice work, but there wasn't the sophistication of the thinking that would have helped maximize the results of that program. And again, it was in part because the coaches had not been trained. the other part is that the ultimate philosophy of it was problematic in the sense that they thought that they could train all players the same way. And that was a huge, huge mistake. So the initial thinking was that all the coaches would be coached the same way, and therefore a kid could jump from coach to coach, and they would all hear the same thing, and they could go from New York to Boca to Carson, and they were getting the same message, which was a gargantuan mistake because, as we all know, kids are individuals like we are, and they need to be trained very differently. They need to, as you pointed out, eat very specifically to what they have, what their needs are, to train in very specific ways, work on specific technical issues and tactics. And so the idea that you're going to train everybody the same way was a huge mistake. I would also say that the other problem they face is the country's so large that to be able to offer those great services to kids all the way across the country is complicated and maybe more than they've been willing to commit to player development. But that doesn't mean that you can't find some way to match up the best kids with the kind of help that they need. And in my vision, to help the coaches, so let's say a coach has a young player or two good young players, those coaches could go to wherever and spend a month or two and train and learn, and everybody could share ideas, and thereby you're supporting the private sector. Everybody's getting better education, and you're not poaching players and alienating local coaches and parents. So I think that, but we do have to have a center where all those things can happen that you mentioned.
Right. And, I mean, now with technology as sophisticated as it is and growing more sophisticated every hour, it seems, does it make sense to put all of this kind of learning and knowledge and education online so that anybody can access it from anywhere? You know, I mean, you've compiled some incredible information and educational pieces. You know, what if USTA took this opportunity to revamp its website too and really create a center for tennis education on the internet?
Well, I think that there are a lot of resources out there, and I've just actually been going through player development website the last week and not very impressed with what's up there. But there are a lot of things online that they put out and other folks put out. Lisa, the one concern I have about online learning is that the information is so complicated as it's applied to each individual player,
mm-hmm.
so that if a coach or parent does not have the knowledge to learn how to analyze that material and apply it in a specific way, then it's not going to be that helpful. I'll give you an example of doing video analysis. So I've sent some video work to other coaches or other kids, take a look at their stroke, and for the most part, people don't know how to look at the video. What are they looking for specifically? The sequencing of how a stroke unfolds is very complicated. It's related to movement, which is often not shown in the video. So unless you have a trained eye looking at that information, it's very difficult to use it in a way that's very productive. That's why I feel that a university setting where people are all together learning in a deeper way is at least one part of the, or a big part of the solution. I think having the information available is great. Don't get me wrong, I think it's great to have it out there. But I do believe that a central place where coaches, top coaches, are training other folks is a really critical element. And also I would say, this is, I think, where we could definitely have to improve is parental education is critical mm-hmm. to this whole process. The parents are, in my mind, get a terrible rap because they are so committed and they put so many resources into this, and yet in a lot of ways they're excluded from the process, and a lot of time needs to be spent educating them so they understand where they can be helpful, where they need to step aside a little bit, what information is useful to them, and that's something that really needs tended to. And I think that's something the USTA could do effectively, would be to bring, well, let's say you were to bring a coach and a player, no reason you couldn't bring parents in of top players and help them through the process.
Right. And it's funny. I mean, I remember when my son was getting ready to play his very first USTA tournament in the 10 and unders, and I asked his coach, you know, how do we do this? I mean, how do I find a tournament? How do I sign him up? You know, what do we do from here, kind of thing? And the coach pointed me to Tennis Link and showed me how to get signed up. But then I had other questions, like, you know, how do we find somebody to warm up with before his match? How do we figure out, to find a doubles partner for him? And, I mean, there were all these, you know, little detail-y questions that, because it was my first go, I had no idea. I called USTA in my local office, and I asked if there was something they could send me or somebody I could talk to that could handhold me through this. And they said, well, we used to do these parent education things, but there wasn't any interest, so we stopped doing them. And so the answer basically was, no, you're on your own.
Right, right.
And I'm very type A, for my listeners mm-hmm. who went along a while, they know that about me. I don't like to do things half-assed. I mean, if I'm going to put my child in something, I want to have an understanding of what I'm getting into and, you know, the progression through the activity. And I just, that information was not available to me. And then I later found out that, you know, they do some parent education talks at, like, the high-level national tournaments. But you know what? By then, it's almost too late. I mean, needs to happen at the entry level. I mean, there has to be some sort of database or something that, or some way to flag the system in Tennis Link that this child is signing up for their first tournament. Therefore, we need to send them, you know, this document, and this document, so that the parents understand what's going on here. And it would be so helpful, I think, to have something like that. So.
Well, that's a great idea. And also, I think the invitation it gives to a new parent to say, wow, this is an organization that cares about me, and it's such a great first impression that you feel that you're getting involved in an organization that really understands what a parent is struggling with and how to help them through that initial, in effect, initiation.
Right.
So that certainly would be something that you would hope would be done. So with that first entry that's shipped out, and so I can't speak for why that's not happening. I think it would definitely be something that's worthwhile investigating. Even if there were a parent liaison at each tournament to welcome the new families and say, this is what the process looks like, and maybe we can help you down that path.
Gosh, that would be a fantastic board position, wouldn't it? To have a parent liaison committee that would be responsible for, you know, finding a parent liaison in each local USTA, each section, all of that. That's a great idea, Tim.
That is a fantastic idea. You know, the USTA's done a nice job by bringing in a college, you know, guy, I think it's Dustin Taylor, who's really working with the colleges now. And that, to me, is sort of something along this line. Let's bring in and educate the many constituents, let's say a beginning parent is a new constituent, and educate them. I think that's absolutely, absolutely critical.
So I think
that's a great idea.
Now, though, I think he took a coaching job.
Oh, he did. Oh, do you know, was he replaced?
I'm not sure about that, and I think this is all pretty recent, so I'm not sure what's going on there. But I just, you know, you're right. I mean, I think that was a great move by USTA to establish that position, and I think it's a key one.
Just the one note about that, about the coaching, I think that there are a lot of super talented 18, 19-year-old kids in college, and if we can get there's a lot of good college coaches, but it tends to be that their technical, tactical work is not as sophisticated as it needs to be if a kid is really serious about pushing up into the futures and the challengers. So when a college coach is so focusing on the managerial elements, which are so important, it would be great if those coaches could get more tactical, nutritional, mental toughness training that they could pass on to their kids. I think that's a really valuable skill.
And I know, like, the coaches themselves have formed communication networks. They do, you know, regular, like, webinars and things with each other to, you know, help each other get better, which I think is awesome. You don't see that so much in the junior coaching world as you do in the college coaching.
And I think in part that is because there's so much fear amongst the junior coaches that a player is going to get poached. You know, when a player is already at college, more likely than not they're going to stay in that spot. Moving from college to college is complicated, you know, as it should be. And I think that the parents, the coaches are fearful that sharing too much information will lead to a player leaving, which obviously happens all the time. And I don't really have a great solution for that, but I think there is a real fear factor involved in that junior coaches don't share information as much.
But I feel like that's part of the parent education piece as well. If parents had a better understanding of the length that it takes to go through the process of developing a player, instead of having this expectation that their child's going to take 3 months of lessons and go out and start winning all the time, that maybe there would be less of that coach hopping. Because, you know, I think what happens at the junior tournaments a lot of the times is the parents are looking at the kids who are winning, and if their kid isn't among them, and it's not their kid's coach coaching those winning players, then, you know, they say, oh, well, that coach must be better. I need to switch my kid. And, you know, rather than understanding that maybe that coach has worked with that particular winning player for 5 years to get them to that place. So, again, it's part of the parent education piece that, you know, yes, there are some kids that step foot on the tennis court for the first time and blow everybody away, but they're far and few between, and it's a long developmental process, and if you're with the right coach and they understand the process and then can communicate that process to the parents, it's a win-win. But where the breakdown oftentimes happens is the coaches don't do a good enough job communicating to the parents, and the parents don't do a good enough job at doing their due diligence and, you know, educating themselves on what it takes. So I don't think all the blame goes one place or the other. I think it's shared. But again, you know, that coaching education piece could take care of a lot of these issues.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I do think there's a element of human nature here that's not going to go away, because tennis is so individual and because there's such a intense push to get to the top. But this is the more education that's out there, the better for everybody, whether it's the coaches or the parents, and then that's going to help with the kids themselves as they get it. You know, as they start to feel that they're getting a better and better environment in which to develop their game. So I completely agree with you. I think educating those two components, coaches, parents, will make an enormous impact. And I think that, you know, as I've made proposals to the USDA, that's where my emphasis has been. I think that's the right way to go.
So if you could design player development from top to bottom, just it's got Tim Mayotte's fingerprints all over it, what does it look like?
Well, first of all, I think there has to be a attention to, and this would take study, to what's going on now, what's working and what's not working, and making sure that those issues and responsibilities are being tended to. But my vision would be that there would be less and less taking of kids away from their current coaches in their current sections and bringing them to Boca or to Carson or to train them in New York. Then I think it would be something along the line of what I've outlined as far as coaches' education. I think there should be an intense college-like atmosphere in which a handful of coaches are being trained full-time by a small staff of you know, great coaches. And then I think that the best players would be invited to come down for a week, 6 weeks, 2 weeks, 2 months to with their coach and get great training with other great players and great coaches. And then so that the coaches are getting help from the USDA, the players are getting better and meeting other kids, and you know, everybody wins, and there's not this ongoing animosity that builds as the USDA is taking over the players as opposed to developing, you know, the larger current situation with where the coaches are. Then also I think that the parental education program would be the next part. That would be critical. How do you reach out to these folks at tournaments? You know, who's in charge of that kind of liaison process with them? I think those components would be the biggest and most influential ones. And getting out of, quote-unquote, player development, so you might even want to change the title of the job to coaching development or coaching and parent development.
Interesting. And before we went on the air, we were talking a little bit about accountability and how, you know, the current system doesn't really have any accountability to anyone. You know, they try things, they decide, oh, this isn't working, and then they try something else, but there seems to be very little in the way of testing and research and documentation and then reporting back to those of us who are the constituents, the membership, as to what's working and what's not working and what they're going to do to fix that. Do you see a solution to that problem? I mean, USDA is such a big organization. How do we fix that piece of it?
A big part of it, to my mind, has to come from the USDA itself. The problem, I think, from my year and a half that I spent inside the institution is that, and again, I think that there's many good people, both as coaches and administrators, who do great work inside of the USDA. But the big problem is that the revenue from the USDA protects them because everything as far as the financial picture of where the USDA is great because of, you know, there's no accountability for player development because it's not impacting the bottom line of their, by far, their biggest revenue generator. So to have accountability, you know, it's tough to tell a company, any company that's making a lot of money, to do things differently. And
well, now,
if you're making...
Can I interrupt you one second? Because
sure.
after Patrick, it was announced that he was stepping down, I read an article that the underlying reason for him stepping down had to do with losing the television contract. and for the U.S. Open, and that the reason that the contract was lost was because there haven't been Americans in the second week, therefore viewership is down, therefore ad revenue has dropped. Have you heard anything about that? Do you know anything about that?
Because that's not my understanding. I don't know the connection of why Patrick stepped down. I think a big part of it, my understanding and speaking with board members, was that the men's tennis was struggling so mightily, and that Patrick being a part-time employee essentially was, you know, really unacceptable given the magnitude of the job. So that was my understanding. But the underlying issue here is that even if revenue generated inside of the United States is down, it's going up tremendously overseas.
Gotcha.
So the USTA is making much, much more money, say, for, I mean, imagine with Japan now making so much, or China. These countries are hungry for watching their champion players play at the U.S. Open.
Gotcha.
So, you know, obviously the LTA in Britain has done well for years because, not because there's been great players, but because Wimbledon is just an icon of a sporting mecca. So other countries are willing to pay and make up whatever difference is lost on American players. So, and then from the USTA's point of view, as far as accountability, that was my biggest concern when I was there, was there was no accountability. In the most basic way, because it right from the start, it was so upsetting to me that Patrick and Jose were part-time employees. It just seemed beyond what could possibly be imagined, given the size of the job. And obviously that was indicative of what the board saw as acceptable. So there is a culture there of, a culture of being, what can you say, protected from what's going on the ground. You know, like, I don't know if Patrick ever went to 10 and under tournaments or 12 and under tournaments or, you know, it's so. But I do think that in the discussions with board members that they are willing to look at new ideas and really excited about trying to turn the page and reach out to people and become a more accountable and hopefully more successful program for player development.
Do we need a manager of player development?
I think you need somebody who can represent U.S. tennis at the start, and however that, you know, people think that's necessary. Yeah, I do think it's. Do you need it? No. Could that person do a tremendous amount of good? Absolutely. If you had the right people and right team in place, and nothing else, then to be a liaison to other parts of the tennis community nationwide. I mean, think how great it would be if you could speak to the head of player development. He was at this tournament, he was at that tournament, or she was at a 10 and under, you know, pop up at a 10 and under tournament, and to feel like you have a voice with the biggest organization in your sport. Yeah, I think that's critical. Whether it should be a player development person or a liaison, regardless, you need somebody who is the go-to person.
Go ahead. Well, I was going to say...
Let me just say this. I think that person becomes something of a lightning rod for what's going on in right and wrong in tennis. So I don't think that person can fix all the problems, but I think that the implementation of programming and communication can set a tone that can really improve the state of tennis in our country.
Of course, when Patrick's resignation was announced, you know, immediately talk went to who's going to take his place, you know, what should that person look like, and some names were thrown out and all of that. And it was interesting to talk to various journalists and coaches and former players about, you know, who they saw stepping into the role. For me as a parent, you know, from looking from the outside in, I see it as a managerial position. I mean, I think, you know, from my perspective, I would love to see somebody in there with business experience who also happens to be tapped into the tennis community and, you know, understands the sport. But, I mean, there's so many management aspects to that position, you know, and I mean, that includes managing coaches. It includes managing volunteers, board members, all of that. What do you think? I mean, do you think it can be, you know, just another former professional player that steps in and, you know, can do the job? Are there some specific skills and experiences that the new person needs to have?
I see it as really three skills. One is definitely the managerial element in which you are building consensus, building programming, and understanding what resources you have and how to obtain those goals. So that's number one. I think number two is that hopefully you have a person who understands player development, both from what it takes to develop a player technically, tactically on the court, and as well to be able to understand the ranking systems and how those work and what's the pathway look like. And then third of all, I think you need a real spokesman, a person who can represent to the press, to the parents, and communicate in a really effective way to the larger tennis community. And it really seems like it's those three elements. I don't think a person, you know, I think a lot of organizations have made the mistake of hiring somebody who is just a figurehead. And I think that was part of the issue with Patrick, because he didn't have development experience and he didn't have managerial experience. So I think he's a good communicator and a good speaker. But I think you need all three of those elements so that they can effectively use the resources. Obviously, that's a tough mix. I do think it has to be somebody who's really comfortable in the world of tennis and brings a certain credibility because of their immersion in that. You know, I was on the board of the ATP, and also I was the president of the Player Council, and one or two times we brought in folks from outside of tennis to take managerial roles at the ATP. And simply by not speaking the tennis language, mm-hmm. people were turned off. I remember one guy came into the boardroom and we said, "Oh, what was the score of that match?" And the guy said, "Well, it was 6-2, you know, the first set." And it was just like, I mean, it's just nothing. It's not a big mistake, but, you know, when you've got a room full of tennis people, that is immediate turnoff. So
right.
You do need somebody who's got credibility and comfortable. You know, that's funny how it was such a small thing. It was nothing.
Right.
But once you hear 6-2, that guy could have presented the most wonderful, thorough marketing plan, but nobody was listening to him.
Right.
So I think it's those three elements that are
okay.
really critical.
And who's on the short list?
You know, I wouldn't really know, to tell you the truth. So I think it depends on what they are envisioning player development will be. From what I've heard is that they are interested in this coaching idea, this coaching of coaches idea.
Good.
But that seems, to me, and this is what good what you brought up, I think that seems more of what Jose's job was and is, as opposed to Patrick's job.
Right.
You know, Patrick's position, as it was structured before, was more of a managerial position. And that takes a slightly different set of skills than what Jose's job. And Jose's job description was and is coaching coaches. I don't think he had the communication skills to do that very effectively. But I think there are two separate positions that are really important to fill here, Patrick's and Jose. If Jose, you know, Jose could stay in his current position, I think that would be up to the new manager. But that's so those are two separate elements.
Word on the street is Jose is staying, but I guess that all remains to be seen here. But
I'm sorry, I missed that. What was that, Lisa?
I said word on the street is that Jose is staying, but
okay.
I you know, I don't know how reliable word on the street is. So
well, I would imagine that whoever I think he's probably staying, and then it would be up to the new head of player development to decide if that's a good fit or not. Very well, maybe they may that person who comes in may have faith in him and think that he's the person to go forward. But I kind of picture that the new person would come in and decide if their agenda, if that person would be the right person to move their agenda forward.
Gotcha. So are you interested in the job?
Yeah, I'm interested. I think I feel like I had bring a good set of skills to it. And, you know, I have some concerns after spending a year and a half there. And I'm sure they have a lot of concerns about me, given how critical I was. So, but yeah, it would be an exciting opportunity to have an impact on a larger scale.
Sure. All right. Well, we're down to our last couple minutes. Is there anything that I've neglected to ask you that you need to say?
No, I don't think so. I just like to point out the two things that you brought up, Lisa. We were talking before the show, which is, first of all, to try to find a way so that there's more scholarships for men's tennis at the college level. And as you rightly said, if that's not an option to continue D1 level in tennis, that's a real drawback and a real loss of incentive for parents to make this enormous investment in tennis. And so I know Wayne Bryan has pushed very hard, and I tend to agree with him that, you know, we try to get more Americans getting those scholarships. The legality of that, I guess, is very complicated, but to push to try to get more spots for Americans, I think, is valuable, and then to try to find some way around the limiting of the scholarships to 4.5. That's critical. And then I think you also brought up a great point, which is to make the ranking system much simpler and to put more of an emphasis on development in the rankings as opposed to just chasing points. In my section in the East, I see kids, you know, driving 8 or 9 hours from New York up to Buffalo to play tournaments that they just feel they have to because they've got to get points. And
right.
Parents are trying to get the sectional rankings up and the national rankings up, and so I think there needs to be a clearing up and a simplification of that whole process, and hopefully a good person at the top would be able to cut through all the bureaucracy and streamline the whole process. So to me, those are the two elements. And then I would just emphasize again the parent education component, because they're the ones who are really left out of this whole process, and yet they're the ones who are making the biggest sacrifices.
Right. Well, you have a lot of wisdom to share, and I so appreciate you taking time to come on and share it with us. And I hope you'll be willing to come back on as this whole player development thing unfolds and we see where it's heading and the decisions USTA makes. I would love to have your input along the way if you're willing to give it.
I'd love, I'm available anytime to talk, Lisa. And again, thank you to you. And there's so many folks out there who are just doing the very hard work of getting information out there. And it's a big country and a lot of different constituents, and we're all in different places. But to have a forum to talk about these things is critical. So thank you for radio and all the writing, and you guys are doing critical work.
Well, thank you. To my listeners, thanks for tuning in. I hope you'll share the podcast with your tennis friends. And Tim, have a great week. The rest of you have a great week, and I'll see you next week on Parenting Aces.
Thank you. I hope things are going well on court 3.
Me too.